Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now another call in for teachers, this time about how you teach boys and girls differently. 212-433-WNYC. Do you need to teach in different ways or just relate in different ways to reach boys and girls in the classroom? Call us. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As some of you may have noticed, we're doing call-ins all week for teachers. This is vacation week for just about every public and private school, K through 12. We know we have many educators who listen. We hope we earn your attention. We've done call-ins for educators both days so far this week, with teachers so much in the political crosshairs these days. And we'll do this one right now. And then, by the way, I'll be off the rest of the week to spend some time with my own seventh grader, since his school is out. Jamie Floyd will be sitting in tomorrow and Friday. But right now, for about 15 minutes, teachers, rather than more on the politics of tenure and standardized tests and things like that, let me ask you something more about teaching. And parents, so many of you will be able to relate to this too. It's about whether you teach boys and girls differently. I ask because the new city schools chancellor, Dennis Walcott, was interviewed by the New York Post editorial board yesterday, and they wrote it up as him coming out in favor of more single-sex schools, boys-only girls schools, girls-only schools, as an option for parents. But I'm less interested in having the single-sex schools debate. We've done that many times, and we'll do it again on this show. But with the resource available to us today of having so many of you teachers listening on vacation, let's find out how you deal with sex differences in the typical classroom that has both boys and girls. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Do you find in general that boys and girls learn differently in any way that you can put into words? Do you actually do anything, use any communication techniques that are different to keep boys and girls engaged and academically thriving? How do you teach differently to boys and to girls? 212-433-WNYC. We'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, join me Monday, May 2nd at 6 p.m. for the final event in our First Principles debate series. The question this time, capitalism, is it moral? Co-sponsored by Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute. Our debaters this time will be investment banker and Ayn Rand disciple Bill Allison versus Washington Post columnist and MSNBC contributor Ezra Klein. Admission is free, but we ask that you RSVP at our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. While you're there, suggest a movie clip about capitalism and watch the ones already posted. And take our survey about the pros and cons of capitalism. That's our final First Principles debate. Is capitalism moral? For free on Monday, May 2nd. Join the pregame going on now at itsafreecountry.org. Well, we're going to take your calls on whether you teach boys and girls differently. Here's a clip from an education professor at Penn State who was on our show the other day, Ali Carr Chelman, talking about schools becoming more and more difficult for boys.
Schools are becoming places that are more and more difficult for boys and any active kids, so boys and some girls as well. But when we look at the statistics, we see a real high number of problems happening for boys in particular, especially around them being referred for ADHD and medications and, you know, very disciplinary actions and things of that sort.
You know, and obviously, traditionally, we talk about girls falling behind in middle school as self-esteem drops, affecting math and science and other subjects. More recently, the concern is turning more to boys. Colleges, as you probably know, are finding themselves with 60% female student body, 60-40 girls, meaning something is happening to boys in K through 12. Here's a little more of Ali Carr Chelman.
For lots of boys, they want to compete, and they have lots of violent fantasies, which are not problematic. They're a normal part of psychological development. But we are very nervous about having anything like that in the classroom. And so parents and teachers feel very uncomfortable about embracing that. And yet I argue that if we don't embrace video gaming because of these things, what we're really saying is we don't really want boys here.
So she wants video games in school. Somebody else suggested to me recently that boys should be allowed to stand. Instead of desks, they should have podiums or the options with, desks that rise into podiums because boys need to physically move around more in the classroom. So do you teach boys and girls? Do you reach boys and girls differently if you are a teacher? Jennifer in Manhattan, thanks so much for calling. Hope you're enjoying your week off.
I sure am. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you teach?
Well, I teach fifth grade ESL, and when I was doing my master's degree, I did my thesis on gender and language acquisition because I realized I didn't know anything about boys. I didn't grow up with boys in my family. And my research, it was just fascinating. But, I mean, as it pertains to language, girls talk a lot. And so when acquiring a second language, girls pick it up in general quicker than boys do.
So how do you compensate?
Yeah, well, I try to create situations where because children and adults, when they're picking up another language, will first pick up not so much academic language, but they'll pick up kind of social language. So I try to create throughout the day about 5 minutes where you can talk with your friends. And I know that the boys will gravitate toward the boys and the girls will gravitate toward the girls. And I just want them to have some time to use the language in a non-academic setting because they only talk with each other. They don't really talk with native English speakers except at lunch. And inevitably, the boys always say, do we have to talk? Can we just, like, play such and such a game? And I'm like, no, you really have to talk.
They say, in general, men and women bond differently when they want to get together. Women get together to talk. Men get together to do something.
Let's do something.
So, Jennifer,
so
I'm going
to
leave You try to give them that up. I'm going to leave it there because we have limited time and I want to get a lot of teachers on, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Stuart in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi there. What do you teach?
Hi, Brian. Great subject. In the 80s, I taught computer science at a high school level, and I was really cognizant, especially back then, of how male a field it was. And I specifically tried to demystify that and to encourage these high school students, so the girls, to continue in it, to take the AP class. And I didn't alter the way I taught, per se, or at least I'm not aware of that. But I did find that specifically reaching out and the encouragement was successful for me. Now I teach another, traditionally, stereotypically male subject. I teach metalworking at an art school at the university level.
Right.
And I also try to really encourage the young women to work in it and to try to demystify why it's traditionally considered to be a male subject. And I have to say, this semester, I have only women. So I do find that pretty successful.
How do you think you reach them? Do you make it safe for them in some way? Is it just, at a girl, go ahead, you could do it, or is there something else?
Well, I try to get away from the machismo of it, and I try to sort of make that into a humorous kind of aside because there is a lot of machismo in ironworking.
Right.
But it's also a lot about delicacy and a lot about finesse and a lot about, a lot of the qualities that young women will excel in. And I try to make it very accessible for them and to encourage them in terms of their own, desires and needs. Some of them will want to pound steel on an anvil. And it's hard to imagine something that's more sort of strength-oriented or macho-oriented.
Typically unfeminine, but obviously everybody's different. Stuart, thank you. And this whole conversation assumes generalities, and I think we can accept that generalities, there may be some truth to them in general. This doesn't dismiss anybody who's different from the norm as an individual, but so many teachers have experience and parents with these with the challenges that the generalities do present. So we've heard from an English as a second language teacher. We've heard from a computer science and metalworking teacher. Here's a music teacher, Scott on Long Island. Hi, Scott. You're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, in music, I teach high school music. I find that young girls tend to have more emotional access. In other words, if I'm playing a passage of music that requires emotional content, that emotional content will always come from the female gender much more of faster access. It'll come a lot sooner. The boy might play technically really well, but he's not going to, it's more general that he will not put out as much emotional content in the music.
And so do you teach? So how do you respond to these perceived differences as a teacher? Do you do something to get the boys in touch with their emotions, to deepen their playing or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I try to sing. I try to get them to access it more. I try to, mostly through singing, chanting, different ways to kind of get them to bring it out of themselves. But I do find that to be the tendency. Also, the other thing that's interesting in the high school realm is in the last 5 years is the advent of handball in the courtyard, that a lot of young boys, especially freshmen through sophomore, halfway through junior year, would much rather do something physical than something that requires like an emotional thing. I mean, I just think that there needs to be more time in the school for that. But as far as teaching music, yeah, definitely something that requires them to get away from the instrument and do something physical definitely does that.
Scott, thanks a lot. Allison in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Allison.
Oh, hi. I'm at work, so I have to make it quick. Just an interesting observation when I was looking for public high schools for my current eighth grader, which you'll be going through soon.
Mm-hmm.
Nest, which is a super school down in the Lower East Side, separates at least the ninth graders. I'm not sure if it goes through the whole high school, the boys and girls in their science classes. So I thought that was interesting. Didn't quite get the time to ask the principal why, but
I'm guessing that's for the benefit of the girls because they feel intimidated in science, you think?
I guess I would assume, but I just also just found it very interesting, like that, you know, that the school would actually be doing this, you know, and anyway.
Right. Thank you. I wonder what Dennis Wolcott would say about that. He'd probably say it's a good thing. I think that traditionally one of the big arguments for having the option of separate sex education is so girls can do as well as they could possibly do in math and science, because they don't in mixed settings. So that, you know, that one falls off on the pro boy side unless you deal with it. James in Brooklyn, you'll be our last one. Hi, James.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
What do you teach?
I play for my students all the time.
Thank you. What do you teach?
I teach math, 8th grade and 7th grade math.
And?
I am a big believer in separating boys and girls, especially at the middle school level. I think with the confluence of factors that come in at middle school, you go from one teacher in elementary school to 6 different teachers in middle school. And then on top of that, you throw in hormones and all the other things that are going on. I think my boys especially tend to learn better in separated, you know, single-sex settings. I've had boys tell me specifically that the only reason they come to school is for the girls. And I think it's often a distractor in class, and it just brings up a whole lot of things that I think we could avoid in two separate settings. I think one of the ways I teach differently to my boys especially is they learn in shorter, quicker settings in terms of discussing a topic. I think the girls tend to have a lot more focus over an extended period of time.
Do you think anything is lost by separating the two? James, stay there because I want to play you another clip from our show recently. This was Peggy Orenstein talking about her book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. And this actually refers to preschoolers. Maybe it's different in middle school, but listen to what she said.
What I didn't know when I started this was the importance of cross-sex play for preschoolers, because even though they naturally sort of go into their own gender groups and have sort of different play patterns and that kind of thing, the little inborn differences between boys and girls become big gaps when they don't interact with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do interact with one another, it actually changes their brains, because their brains are the most malleable when they're in preschool, and does increase, just playing together increases girls' spatial skills, helps with boys' reading.
Just playing together improves girls' spatial skills, helps with boys' reading. Do you think anything is lost in your experience if they are separate?
No. In fact, I actually agree with that comment very much so, but I think there's the idea of interaction is definitely important. I think that boys and girls should interact in the school setting, but I just don't think it necessarily has to happen in the classroom. I think that I think they learn differently when they're in the classroom itself, in the actual classroom setting, when they're in front of a teacher and they're sitting there absorbing information. I think it happens in a different way when they're separated. And then I think, you know, that interaction at lunchtime, that interaction when they're at play, I think that is very important, even mm-hmm. at the middle school level. I think it's extremely mm-hmm. important. But it's something different happens in the actual classroom setting when they're absorbing information. I think a lot of the problems that I have in my classroom can be avoided by that separate sex interaction.
James, thank you so much for your call. We'll see if the new school's chancellor, Dennis Wolcott's idea for increasing the number of separate sex schools that parents could choose, if they choose, actually goes through. And teachers, thanks again for all your thoughtful calls. Monday, Tuesday, and today, we appreciate the work of educators in the classroom, no matter what's going on politically, that's for sure. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Siva Vaidyanathan and his book, The Googleization of Everything. Stay tuned. And by the way, later in the show, we'll be talking about all that Facebook money going into Newark public schools. That'll be in about an hour with Education Arne Duncan, Secretary Arne Duncan there today.